Welcome to the Miles to Memories podcast. I'm Sean Coomer, your host, joined by Joe Chung from As the Joe Flies and Disney Deciphered. How's your week been, Joe?
Pretty crazy. It's been pretty wild. Still catching up. I haven't had a ton of work to do since coming back from Taiwan. Did get over jet lag. I wanted to say a shout out and thank you to Dominique, who was the first person to recommend the Time Shifter app. By the time we got that email, it was too late. I mean, because our episode released 4 days after we recorded. But yes, thank you. Others mentioned it as well, but Dominique was the first. So thank you so much. And got to check it out. They say that the first, your first trip is free. And then it, I don't know, have you heard of this app? It like kind of gives you a schedule for, I'm kind of curious how it works, but I don't want to waste my first trip. Like I got to wait till I'm jet lagged now again to try it out.
Is there anything worse than that when you download an app? I downloaded this off-roading app the other day and it has a premium version and it gave me a 7-day free trial and I don't need it like right now. And I was like, ah, so I used my free trial on that. I haven't used it. It does have, like you said, the first trip is free. There's a premium version. So we'll have to check it out. So basically it's just shifting. It's teaching you how to go to sleep or how to shift your schedule. Have you looked into it at all as far as like what exactly it's doing for you?
I didn't. I was too scared, but I think it tells you when to stay up. You know what, Sean? Let me not lie. Okay, let's continue. I'm going to look it up while we're talking and then we'll come back to it. Big market tease, just like the radio.
But yeah, we want to bring you this information. We're not trying to say that we've used the app or anything like that, but it's always good, especially for people who travel a lot. I mean, have crazy schedules. You know, we had Han on a couple weeks ago, and there's a lot of people in this community who travel like that, who have these insane things where you're hitting continent to continent, multiple time zones on one trip. And anything that can help with that, I think is good. So I will, maybe I'll try it out on this trip to Europe next week, coming back and see how that works.
Yeah.
If I remember.
Cause we talked last week about how it's like 10 hours, right? So worse for you than it is for me. I think if you were like, I'm curious, I feel like I prefer, if I was going to use it, the first time I'd use it, I'd want to use it when I come home, because when I'm on the trip, it's like, you're just in survival mode / enjoyment mode, right? I don't know. How do you feel?
Yeah, I think I would use it for coming home too. I think that's the hardest thing. When I'm getting there, I tend to just adjust however I have to. And Europe doesn't seem to be as bad for me for some reason compared to Asia. You know, Asia, I'm up all night, usually the first couple days when I'm there. Europe, I seem to adjust a little bit better. Maybe I lose a little bit of sleep, but I seem to adjust to the days a little quicker when I'm heading over there. So yeah, coming back, we'll do that. I guess I should update on that really quickly. So over the weekend, I was looking at flights back. We had a American Airlines redemption on Air Tahiti Nui Premium Economy from Charles de Gaulle to Seattle to Las Vegas, and it was $40,000 per way, which wasn't bad for Premium Economy. But I did find a Savior Award. We would stay an extra day, so Ellie would miss a day of school. Sorry, Mr. Chung. I know you're going to be upset about that, but you know, it gives us an extra day in Paris, and it's only $57,500 coming back in business class. We do have to like make a double connection, London and LA, but the timings are really good. So I think we're going to switch to that. And unfortunately, my American Airlines account, just like when I booked this award, Joe, it's giving me an error. So I actually already canceled the Premium Economy because I needed the miles back in order to book this, because I don't have a huge balance these days. And I don't know, there's some error, just like there was with that one where it's saying 0 miles and now I have to call and wait hours on the phone. So I'm not looking forward to that, but I guess I have no choice because I already canceled the other one.
I mean, I guess as long as you have yourself set up, then it's worth it in the end. But yeah, that it's just, I don't know. Planning travel is so tiring sometimes right now, Sean. I'm planning like multiple trips right now. And yeah, it's exhausting, even if you do it for a living.
I think it's exhausting. Most people would think it's exhausting to look for a new flight back a week before your trip and upgrade it and change it. But like I said, it would be nice to have an extra day in Paris. That'll be fun. But flying back in business class for $17,500 more, I think that's not bad. And actually, even though we have an extra connection, a really quick connection in London, it's the same time, like because we had a big layover in Seattle. So the actual time of the trip is a little bit less, actually, with the extra connection. So I mean, I'm looking forward to that. That'll be nice to fly business class both ways. Not necessary, Joe, but nice nonetheless. It's just American Airlines business class both ways, so it's not anything exotic at all.
Smoke them if you got them. Smoke them if you got them. So I watched Time Shifter's one-minute video, and they say it's a lot about, it seems like the app is very much focused on getting sunlight. And so it says, advertises that it's going to give you simple directions. Like, I'm looking at a screenshot here. It's like, try to get this much amount of sunlight and don't drink coffee, caffeine, that kind of thing. They're saying the premise is that to fix your circadian rhythms, it's really like they're really emphasizing the amount of sun and brightness you get. And they're saying that, like, if you get the wrong amount or you get it at the wrong times, it'll mess up your circadian rhythms further. So this is me reading to you the advertisement for Time Shifter. And Sean, I'm going to remind you to try it when you get back to Vegas and do your best. And oh, one thing it says, and of course this makes sense because of this app, there's like a practical feature where like the advice will be tailored to, you know, stuff. You know, it's going to be tough for you, right, Sean? You are editing in office all day. If you're not editing in office, you're just walking around casinos, which does not actually have...
Well, what a way to describe my life. Thank you, Joe.
Is it wrong?
A little bit. I do a little bit more than that. I travel too, so there you go.
Right.
There's a little bit of that too.
We're talking about when you get back from your travel, plus all the work you're going to be catching up on. So anyway, yes, I'm being unfair to you, Sean.
Can we go back a little bit for the listener, a little behind the scenes? So apparently the whole time I was talking about changing my flight, Joe was watching this video about the app. So there was no pause where Joe watched this video. He did it while I was talking, which is hilarious to me.
It's okay. I watched the closed captions. Okay. I did not have the sound on because I couldn't listen to you. Sean, I'm going to listen to it again when I edit it. All right. But anyway, it's fair. I threw Sean under the bus. Sean threw me under the bus. We're even, Steven. We're good.
Hey, you are the multitasker of the year. That's one of the reasons you're such a great travel agent, I imagine, is that you're able to do a million things at once. So that is something that is you're very strong at that. You're very strong
Thank
at
you.
Multitasking.
Thank you. I want to take like an international trip right now to try this app, though. It seems good. So, Sean, I'll remind you to try to use it, and then maybe we can talk about it. I did want to talk about, you know, talking about planning travel being stressful. So people are always like, Disney World is like impossible. It's so hard, blah, blah, blah. Hey, do you know what is also super stressful? We are planning to go to Glacier National Park this summer, and you have to get vehicle reservations if you want to enter the park anytime before 3 p.m. through like the main entrance. Dude, it is like as bad as getting a virtual queue. They were all sold out within 3 minutes. I only started practicing 3 days before I actually needed them. As we're talking right now, Sean, I'm only halfway through my trip, so I'm not even sure I'm going to get all the vehicle reservations I need. Dude, it was stressful. Like, people say Disney World is stressful. Like, I'm like, because part of me is like, if I don't get this vehicle reservation, are we just going to straight up cancel the trip? Like, we haven't booked flights yet. We've only booked hotels. And, you know, I don't know if you have any experience with like national parks and doing this, but I was like, dude, I need a travel agent to do this for me. Like, I need somebody. I mean, I did it for myself. And the other problem is it's only $2 for the vehicle reservation. So, you know, it's basically free, which means people are getting it who might not even like end up using it. So each time I've gotten it for 2 days of our trip so far, I've had to refresh 5 or 6 times. And then they say how many they are. I'm guessing it starts at around 1,200 because the first number I've seen is like 1,100 something, and you just keep seeing the numbers go down, like this many left. Because every time you try it and it errors out, you know, you refresh the page and then it goes down. It's stressful.
Those government websites, right? I don't know. I remember it's like the U.S. Mint, right? When everybody's trying to get the coins and then it goes down. There's nothing more frustrating than that. But we all think, like, we take advantage of the fact in 2024, everything should work, right? You go to a website, it works. But when, you know, we still have those issues when people crush a website and, you know, they don't want to put it. But it seems like they probably have that problem every year, every day. Like, they should probably do it. So this is just to limit the amount of cars going into the national park?
Yeah. And now that I think about it, so they released half 4 months in advance. So if it's 1,200 cars, that means they're still going to let like 2,400 cars in total. So, you know, I know that these national parks, and the reason why, and it makes sense, like, no matter how beautiful the national park is, you don't want to be stuck in traffic forever. So I think like that's why they do it. But I was just getting flashbacks from getting virtual queues and stuff at Walt Disney World, you know, except for, like I said, because it's so far in advance, I think I would seriously, if I didn't get at least a couple of the days that we're planning to go, like, I would seriously consider canceling the trip because I don't want to, they released the other half the day before, right? But I don't want to be in, is it Montana? I think it's Montana. Yeah, or just Wyoming. I don't want to be in Wyoming, right? And like not be able to drive in, you know, like I'm not going to deal with that. I mean, it's already annoying to get out there. There's no direct flights and all that stuff. So
sorry to everybody who lives in Wyoming, since Joe just trashed your state saying that there's nothing to do outside the national park. It's beautiful. Just go into the mountains, go see the scenery. I don't know, but yeah, it is nuts. Summer travel to a national park, that's crazy. Like you said, traffic. I remember Yellowstone years ago. I don't think they controlled the cars going through Yellowstone, and there's these major roads, and it could take hours to get through the park just because of the traffic and everybody stopping to look at the animals. And yeah, I can see that. Plus, you probably don't want pollution either. And you're there to be in nature, not to deal with 1,000 cars. So do they have like a bus system? I know like in Zion in Utah, they have a few that can drive in, but for the most part, people have to use an internal bus system.
They do have a bus system. Also, I was right the first time. Should have gone with my gut. It is Montana. So now apologies to both Montana and Wyoming. But I think just to, you know, make you feel bad about it, Sean, like this is a bucket list item for my dad, which is why we're like planning the trip. And so, yeah, it's one of those things where like he wants to go to Glacier National Park. I'm like, I'll plan this for you. I mean, Jess wants to go too, but she's hopefully less close to the bucket than my dad is, right? And so that's our plan, and that's why we're doing that. And it should be pretty awesome. The other thing that you didn't mention, Sean, it's not just people stopping to watch the wildlife. It's like, because we're going to swing through, not swing by, but we're going to go to Yellowstone as well. And I was talking to like a tour guide, and they're like, well, we can't control if like there's bison crossing the road, right? And so it's not just stopping to watch the wildlife. It's like the wildlife actually getting in the way. And, you know, there's these smaller roads, and then it could just be a complete mess.
Yeah. And then God forbid somebody sees a moose, and then it's all over because people just stop. Even if it's on the side of the road, they'll just stop in the middle of the road to see it. I saw that a couple of times. Bears too, I guess, attract people. I didn't see any bears in Yellowstone, but I'm sure they're there. It's a beautiful park though. I haven't been to Glacier, but national parks, man, I think that if people don't have them on their radar, because I think there's people who are so focused on traveling overseas and maybe some of the bigger tourist destinations. You and I love Disney. I love amusement parks. So I do a lot of travel around that. But the national parks do deliver. We have such an incredible national park system, and everything from caves to, you know, big ones like Yellowstone that you can imagine, or Yosemite. But there's so many smaller parks, whether it's like Joshua Tree with interesting desert landscape, Wind Cave National Park in New Mexico, which nobody's probably ever heard of, which is an incredible cave system, and so many more. So yeah, I'm glad to hear we're talking about it, because I haven't been to enough national parks the last couple of years. Need to change that.
Yeah, it's good to hear about Wind Cave. My daughter, actually all my kids are really obsessed with that kind of stuff. I talked to you when we were in New Zealand. We went to the Glowworm Cave or whatever, which they really liked glowworms, but they liked the cave itself. So I'm going to have to put that one on my list. I really wish that, you know, these are the times where I'm like, oh man, maybe I should just homeschool for a semester or something like that, or a year like you did. Because when we're going in the summer, I mean, I just told you, right? They sold out in 3 minutes, the vehicle reservations. Obviously, it's going to be a super high demand time. There's going to be a ton of traffic. A buddy of mine was just skiing. I think he was in Park City, Utah, somewhere like a couple hours out of Yellowstone. So he booked a tour that like just went to Yellowstone for the day. So they drove the couple hours up to Yellowstone and then just drove around Yellowstone during the day. And during the winter, because it's like covered in snow, like there's only limited access. So it's like easiest to go with one of these tour guides. And he posted some of like the coolest pictures on Instagram, like wolves that were walking by, and then like bears like fishing like in the lake, like I'm not in the lake, but just like rivers, like going for fish and stuff like that. And so, and he told me, you know, I was messaging him because we're going to Yellowstone. I was like, oh man, that looks so awesome. And he's like, yeah, there was like nobody there. It was like, you know, it was just them. You know, I feel like that is the ideal national park experience, right? Not in July when there's a million cars in a row. That's all we can do right now. And so we're just going to have to live with it. But, you know, if I could go during these shoulder seasons, even May or September, right? I'm sure it's like amazing in all these national parks.
Yeah, I think May, September is the way to go. But if you do have to go in the summer, something I've noticed from a lot of different road trips over the years is July is the worst, right? July 4th, Independence Day, that weekend starts weird road trips for everybody. And the whole month of July is crazy. So the earlier in June, even if you have to wait till kids get out of school to go to a national park, the better, especially the big ones like Yellowstone, like Yosemite, the ones that everybody sort of bucket list items, I'm sure Glacier and a few others that everybody has. So the closer you get to July 4th, the more you want to avoid it. That's my advice for anything summer related travel in the US. Road trip July 4th. So hit up June, hit up May, hit up September, late August, better stuff.
Wow. Thanks, Sean. Where were you when I was planning this whole entire trip?
You should ask.
No. I totally agree with you. Our summer is so book solid with like camps and stuff like that, that we were stuck going close to July 4th. It kind of is what it is. I am like hoping that, I mean, I'm sure the kids will complain, but I'm just hoping that, you know, if you're going to be stuck in a traffic jam, I'm sure it's still going to be frustrating, but at least if the scenery is beautiful, something that like I'm not going to see again for many, many years, I'm telling myself that that will be my solace, but we'll see. We'll see.
Few things cooler in life than a herd of bison stopped on the road. It is neat to see them in person, and it sort of blows your mind at what they look like and how big they are. But do not approach them. Do not get close to them. They can charge you. They run very fast, and many people have been hurt thinking that they were being cool, getting a little too close to a bison.
Do not
and
pet.
They are very
dangerous. Do not
no,
pet.
No, don't even get remotely close enough to pet. But they are, you know, cool. What I did was we pulled up to a group of them probably about 40 feet away. And you want to see it kind of out in nature. So you just kind of get out of the car. You're still a decent amount away. If they start coming at you, you just get right back in, just stay right next to the car. So that's what I did. And so you can get pictures, you can get somewhat close, but you can run back in the car if they come at you. And they run. They're fast. Look at it, you know. Anyway. So we have some bad news, Joe, about Hyatt. Well, it's not bad news. I mean, every year Hyatt changes their categories, as do other programs. But it seems like the last few years, there's a trend. And that's that a lot more properties are going up than down. And that's, you know, inflationary pressures or whatever. But beginning on March 26th, Hyatt's switching over their categories at 183 hotels, 46 going down, 137 going up. Quite a few going from category 7 to 8 as well, which, as people know, that makes that 1 through 7 certificate not good for those properties. A lot going from 4 to 5 as well. Were there any properties on the list that kind of stood out to you?
Yeah, so the one that I was a little bit sad about was the Grand Hyatt Tokyo. I hear that's a really good property. And, you know, we are wanting to go to Japan, speaking of places that currently is being overrun by tourists. But we want to go. It's still Category 7, thankfully. So it's still kind of like within reach. Could use one of my Cat 1 to 7 certs to take off one of those nights type of situation. But, you know, I think that's been a very, amongst Hyatt fans, been a very beloved property for a while. So it's tough to see that one go up. I think that was the only one that really stood out to me. Oh, the other one that stood out to me was Haunted Grand Hyatt Taipei going down one category. Information that would have been useful to me last month. Enjoy my extra 21,000 points, Hyatt. Thanks for nothing.
Yeah, I might stay there because we have that flight back from Taiwan coming back from Asia in the summer. So I was excited to see that. Grand Hyatt Tokyo, it's funny because I've never stayed there. I've stayed at most of the Hyatts in Tokyo, and it's just never stood out to me as a special-looking hotel. As you said, people do like it, but the Andaz I find to be a great property, one of the best Hyatts in the world, and I've only stayed there once because I'm always trying to try others. The Centric in Ginza, I think, is a lower category. I love that hotel a lot. But the other Hyatt in Tokyo, the Regency out by Tokyo Bay, Joe, is going down to Category 3 as well. That's the best Hyatt for Tokyo Disneyland. I stayed there last year. It's not on property, but they have a shuttle. It's about 10 minutes away. And I like that property. It's not fancy, I guess. It's a new Hyatt Regency. They do have a Regency Club. I thought the rooms were fine. I don't think you're going to go there and expect like Japanese luxury or anything, but it's a great property for Category 3 being right near Disney too. So that's a good thing. In the U.S., there were a few interesting ones. The Alila in San Diego went down a category, and there were a few others, but for the most part, everything going up. In L.A., the Hyatt Regency Westlake, which is the lowest category in the entire L.A. area, and Westlake really not L.A., but the L.A. area went up to a Category 4, so I think that's the lowest you can find in the L.A. area for a proper full-service hotel. So, yeah, it's just like anything. Not great, but not the end of the world. Not a devaluation per se. It's just a shift in categories.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we should expect it at this point every year and things will move up. I mean, when it comes down to it, it's just supply and demand. And, you know, whether we like it or not, right, this is what happens to the price of everything, whether we're thinking about points or whatever. So, you know, it happens. I feel like when they first started doing this, people were like crying a lot more. I was crying a lot more. The cat ate thing still sucks, but I guess Stockholm syndrome, like I'm just used to it now. So
yeah, my big criticism of Hyatt is that they didn't change this. I mean, I know they added the category 1 through 8 cert for people who stay a ton of nights, right? I mean, very few people are probably ever going to earn that. But, you know, I understand from a business perspective because there's no cap on rates, right, on redemptions for them. So some of these properties are so expensive that they have to have that sort of, I don't know, carrot to dangle. But I do think that it downgraded their program in just a little bit, that there is now all these properties that you can't book with the Category 1 through 7 certificate. And as we predicted, what was the first list, like 6 or 7 of them? I haven't looked, but I think it's up to, you know, 20s or 30s at this point. There's quite a few Category 8, so that's an unfortunate thing about it. Now, let's talk some good Hyatt news, Joe, and that is that they're back in Las Vegas. Speaking of my other job of walking around casinos, as you say, the Rio has officially joined World of Hyatt. So they announced this partnership years ago, saying that the Hyatt Regency brand would be coming to Rio and some other brands. And Rio is in the first phase of their renovation. So for people who haven't been to Las Vegas in a while, Rio was owned by Caesars Entertainment. They sold it a few years ago to a company called Dreamscape, who just took over operations a few months ago. Caesars was running it for all these years. They partnered with Hyatt, and they're in the middle of a renovation. So all of their rooms in one of the towers have been renovated. This is going to be Unbound, so it's not going to be Hyatt Regency yet. We don't know what the future plans are for the full branding, but it's a Category 3, meaning like the old Hyatt days with the MGM properties, midweek, low demand times. This is going to be a terrible value, and higher demand times, it may be a good value.
It's always so exciting to just think about the different places that we can stay at and, you know, how, like, it really sucks that we will all... RIP Excalibur, right? Definitely. You know, I've just enjoyed so many stays there over the last few years, and that's sad. But that being said, I think when MGM and Hyatt broke up, I was like, man, I'm not going to have any options for Hyatt anymore. I really like the Rio. I don't love staying at places that are off the strip because, you know, I don't go to Vegas that much and I want to be by the action. But every time I visited the Rio, I haven't stayed there. But the price seems right to me right now. And, you know, the thing with those resorts, though, is that when you're out there, you kind of actually, although I haven't been to Vegas for so long, I really think things have changed, right? Like it used to be, I would just stay on the strip and I would never go anywhere, but dating myself, but I haven't been for like a long time. Got to fix that. You know, Uber was barely a thing the last time I was there. And it was just taxis or whatever. Now it's so much easier to get around. Maybe staying at the Rio isn't as much of a, you know, big deal. Or I can go outside and get some sun, time shifter.
There you go. That terrible 3-hour jet lag, that time shift that you have to do. Yeah, Rio has seen better days. I'm not going to deny that. Caesar stopped spending money there maybe a decade ago, and they just slowly let it, I don't know, turn into something terrible. And then they sold it right before COVID with a multi-year management agreement. And because of COVID, the new owners, it took them a while to get the financing and get it going. There's a lot that still has to be done. They've installed a new food hall where the buffet used to be, but the casino still largely looks the same, which is very old and dated. So this property has a lot to go, but the rooms, like I said, in the Ipanema Tower have been renovated and they're pretty decent. Think of like a Hyatt Regency sort of level, maybe Hyatt Place-ish. There's a couch that looks very much like a Hyatt Place couch there, which is interesting, but the owners seem to be putting a lot into this. It's going to be years before this turns into a Hyatt-level property, in my opinion, a true Hyatt-level property, but this is where they're headed, and I'm excited for all the changes. They also changed all of the lights on the outside. Joe, you haven't been here for a while, but the Rio had been so dilapidated on the outside, the paint was peeling, there was rust on the building, and half the old neon lights on the outside of the building were burned out, and they replaced it all with brand new LEDs. It does a light show. It's beautiful. The food hall is beautiful. So everything they've done has been great. They just have a lot more to do. And while we're talking Vegas, we talked about Hyatt losing MGM while Marriott gained MGM. And now, thankfully, all but one of the MGM properties are bookable via Marriott Bonvoy, and that is Nomad. For some reason, the Nomad Hotel you can't book. Now, Nomad is a hotel in New York City that is a partner with MGM, and so it's a kind of a co-branded hotel, so maybe that has to do with it. but everything else is now available. And there are some good deals too. So let's take a look at that. The lowest tier MGM properties in Vegas are only going to be 5,000 Bonvoy points a night. Some are 9,000, and then 20,000 would be the high end. So you're looking at things like Vidara, Signature at MGM, Bellagio, those types, Aria, 20,000 points, and your beloved Excalibur, Luxor on the low end, 5,000 points a night. Places like New York in the middle at 9,000. Not a terrible deal for some of this stuff. You will have to pay the resort fee, which in most cases is going to be between $42, $43, including tax, all the way up to $56.
Yeah, I think it looks pretty good. The thing that I always found about Vegas is a lot of times I guess what I would say is compare with cash every time, because sometimes it's like so cheap. I mean, if you're like me and you never use your Bonvoy points, using Bonvoy points is probably more valuable the majority of the time, just because like I never use them. Like I hadn't used them for years, and I used it for our random stay in Toronto on the way home from Taiwan. So if you're in that situation, then of course use your points. But otherwise, compare with cash. I think the best value is when you know that there's a race coming, or it's a fight, or there's a big Raiders game or something like that, and Bonvoy hasn't figured it out yet, and you can book it at because since it's variable pricing, you can book it before they catch on and you can get in for cheap. Because I'm pretty sure, I mean, in my experience for most of these companies, the cash rates, they adjust faster than the points rates if the points are variable.
Yeah, and I should mention, like, all those numbers I said were the starting rates. That's the lowest that you will find it. As Joe mentioned, Bonvoy, they do price their awards based on the cash price. Although there are values you can find, and it's not always consistent. So it does make sense to search the stuff. But as you said, kind of calculate what the cash rate is. And then keep in mind, you do have to pay resort fees unless you're an ambassador elite, which you can then match to MGM status and get waive resort fees that way. But for the most part, everybody's going to be paying resort fees there, and that's not good. Unlike the Hyatt days, where a lot of Hyatt elites got MGM Gold status, therefore no resort fees. I think MGM's revenues are going to be much higher with this partnership, and I think that's the design. Not to mention the fact that Bonvoy is huge, a lot more members than Hyatt. So I think from MGM's perspective, this is probably a win-win, a much better partnership for them. And, they entered into that Hyatt partnership a long, long time ago. Things have changed a lot. So I'm just glad this finally happened with that cyber attack. I mean, they promised this months ago, so it's good to see it's finally there. And then also, it's interesting, the same week that Hyatt comes in with Rio. I don't think that's a coincidence that this all happened the same week.
Quote unquote cyber attack. The longer the delay is, the more I thought like, oh, maybe they just, had someone hack them so that they could delay this whole thing. That's a complete conspiracy theory and a joke. Okay, I'm joking.
So let's stay on Marriott. I guess we're just talking Hyatt, Marriott, Vegas today. I don't know. But Marriott launched some new credit card offers that are best ever bonuses on the Bonvoy Brilliant card and the Bonvoy Bevy card. And so we should go over that. Now, the Bonvoy Brilliant card is, their premium card. It comes with $300 in statement credits for restaurant purchases. You get a free night every year, up to $85,000, plus you can top that off. You get platinum elite status. So this is the shortcut to free breakfast with just a credit card on the Marriott side. And right now, the welcome offer that they have, 185,000 Bonvoy points after 6,000 in purchases in the first 6 months, which is nice. They give you a little bit of extra time for that. That will end May 1st. So this offer will be around for a little bit of time. The one downside of this card, Joe, is there is a $650 annual fee. So with the credits, you can make this work like a lot of American Express cards. You get the status, which can be valuable with breakfast. Marriott's breakfast for Platinum is not nearly as good as Hyatt's for their Globalists, but it's still a benefit. And this is a card that some people should definitely check out. 185,000 Marriott points, pretty good too.
Yeah, I've definitely been thinking about this and also the Bevy, which I think we're going to be talking about next. He says after he just said that he hadn't used the single Bonvoy point for 3 years. But thinking about it, I always keep these Bonvoy points around just in case I'm going to go stay at the Swan and Dolphin or something like that at Walt Disney World. Every single time, though, we talk about one of these credit cards, I must complain. I know you're all sick of it by now. How do I know if I'm eligible for this card or not? Just so annoying. Make sure you know for sure that you're eligible, just with all the rules of like, did you used to have a Chase? Did you used to have an Amex? Blah, blah, blah. You just gotta, You just got to figure that out. But yeah, should we talk about the Bevy? That's the $250 annual fee one, right? The middle one?
Yeah, so the Bevy also has a best ever bonus, and this is probably one that's going to be more attractive to a lot of people. $250 annual fee on that card, and it comes with gold status, so that's a big difference, I think, if you're looking at your experience. And it's important to look at how often you stay. It's nice to have status, right? And gold status, let's not talk about that joke, because gold status, in my opinion, with Marriott, never got me anything. But platinum status, if you're going for the higher annual fee card, obviously the sign up is 30,000 points more, but you're paying a heftier annual fee. You're getting a lot more credits. So if you want to play that game, I actually think that's a better offer, especially if you stay in Marriott properties and you're going to use that platinum status. But a lot of people just don't want to pay the annual fee or jump through all the credit hoops to try to do that. And, you know, that is something American Express makes you do. So this card, $250 annual fee, 155,000 Bonvoy points after 5K spend in the first 6 months. Same thing, offer ends May 1st. Now, the big difference here on the free night, you do also get a free night award every year, but it's capped at 50K instead of 85K with the other card. Like I said, I think overall the other offer is better, but the annual fee, the upfront cost, I totally see a lot of people going with this, and I still think this is a great offer, and just don't count on that gold status for anything.
Useless.
Yeah.
I have it. Does nothing. Does nothing. The goggles do nothing. So, yeah.
Doesn't the platinum card give you Bonvoy gold? So everybody already has that anyway, right?
Yeah, it's the old Hilton gold, except for Hilton gold is useful when you're overseas sometimes, and Bonvoy gold seems useful never. Well, you know what I'm saying.
It really is interesting, though, this day and age that you can get these statuses that come with decent stuff, especially overseas, right? Get this card. Marriott Platinum status works overseas really well. It's very similar to how Hilton Gold is. It's just the way they treat elites, because I don't think they give away elite status in Asia, for example, on the same level with credit cards. So there's not as many people that have it. And so it's a little bit more special. I think that's why you get treated a little better with Hilton Gold, Hilton Diamond, and also these other statuses, just any status, right? I even get treated better as a Hyatt Globalist when I'm in Asia or elsewhere than I do in the US. So I think it's with any program. But you can get Marriott status, free breakfast, potential suite upgrades with a credit card. You can get Hilton status with a credit card. And I guess that's why people really play the Hyatt game too, because you got to try a little harder, even though you can earn it through a credit card, I guess, with Hyatt. But yeah, I think it's nice to see them doing this. As you said, American Express, the rules. I think you need a college degree to figure out if you're eligible for these bonuses.
Clear as mud. Clear as mud for sure. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's always the downside. I guess the good thing about American Express is if you apply, it usually tells you with a pop-up if you're not eligible, and they don't generally run your credit if you already have a card with them, which is a nice thing as well. So you're not taking a hit if you do mess up and you're not eligible. But just do that and maybe confirm it via secure message as well. I don't know, but I think on the Chase side, they won't approve you, but I think American Express will approve you and not give you the bonus. I think that's potential. Although lately I've heard that basically if you don't get the pop-up, you're okay, you know, as far as that, meaning you should be okay, but don't rely on that. You know, don't rely on the, if I don't get the pop-up, I've complied with all the rules. Because if you aren't, the one thing I've learned about American Express is if they have a way to deny you something, you know, when there's a problem and you're kind of getting in the weeds with them, I'm not talking about like, oh, this credit didn't post and you get a chat agent and they give you the credit, that's great. But if it's a bigger problem and you start getting into the weeds with their supervisors, it's been years since I've had to do this, but they will stick to the rules. They will stick to the terms, and they're not overly generous and like, oh, here's something that you aren't entitled to.
Yeah, I agree. Don't love it, but they've been so good overall. It's definitely a pain in the butt that I'm willing to take. Sean, I don't know if I told you, but I froze my credit scores a couple of months ago. I think I got like something that seemed fraudy, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and freeze these. It was pretty easy. Like, I remember when people used to do this, it was like sometimes you had to make a phone call, and it was like blah, blah, blah. It was, you know, three or four clicks. Went to Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax, and click, 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 froze everything. And according to what it says, if I want to apply for a card, just click, click, click again and unfreeze them, do it temporarily. So I kind of, you know, I don't even know if it really does that much, but it gave me a little bit of peace of mind, because I was getting like, you know, there's so much, we've talked about this, like the spam emails and the spam calls and all that stuff. And I'm like, you know what? let me freeze my credit scores so that if I get any email that says that I applied for a card or anything like that, I might have done it like right after we had that talk about the when Bank of America or quote unquote Bank of America called me and tried to scam me out of my Zelle money or whatever. It's been great, and I haven't really had to think about it. So, you know, I don't know why I brought that up.
Well, they all have apps too, which makes it even easier. If you have the app, if you're freezing and unfreezing often, I know I've used the TransUnion app, but I think I've used all three of them, and you just go in there and click and freeze it. So that's a good thing to do until you apply. You get really excited about a credit card offer, Joe, and you apply without thinking that you're frozen and then you just mess up the application. I've done that before. I guess on the subject of credit, Rakuten has 95X right now at LifeLock. And I did that a year ago because the reason I sort of looked at this yesterday was my renewal's coming up. And I think the first year they give you like a 52% discount. So it's like under $400 for their ultimate premium family tier, whatever it is. And I signed up for that. And that goes up to like six something after the first year. But based on what people have said, I can just cancel and maybe get it again. So I'll try to do that. So I did that. LifeLock, back in the day, they were terrible. Apparently, they used to make you call them to cancel. So you couldn't just cancel your account. But thankfully, they must have changed that because I went in yesterday. I was able to cancel the auto renew, and then it'll just run out when the date's up, and then hopefully I can get it again. But if somebody's out there looking, 95X with Rakuten, those are American Express membership rewards points. You can basically cash those out if you have a Schwab card and pay back yourself for LifeLock, or you can use them for other stuff or whatever. But it's basically like getting LifeLock for almost free-ish, I guess.
That works too. I had LifeLock for a while, but then I kept thinking to myself, I'm going to forget to cancel it if I don't. So, I mean, your tip was good, but that was another time.
Yeah, I think now that you can turn off auto renewal and cancel it, you should be able to sign up theoretically with the system I just used and then cancel it a day later, and it should work through the rest of your subscription for the year. And that way you can almost set it up right at the beginning not to auto renew. So I think it's really nice that they did that. For somebody who's protecting people's identities, the fact that they made you call in and jump through hoops just to basically protect their subscription base kind of sucks. So it's nice to see that they changed that. One last quick story is that there are 8 Amex offers for hotels around the world. And I just wanted to remind people of that. These aren't like your Hyatts, Marriotts, stuff like that. These are other chains. And a lot of these are often on American Express offers. So as you're traveling, there's so many regional hotel chains or specific to certain countries, things you've never heard about before. So DDG wrote up a post last week about all of the ones like Auberge, Equinox, Luxury Escapes, Mandarin Oriental, The Line Hotels, Viceroy Hotels, a few others that are around. But always a good idea when you're kind of looking outside of the main chains to see if there's an offer available. And Amex offers, but also Google, and you know, there's some other offers as well. So make sure to kind of keep that in mind.
Chase, all those random ones. I got one last story that I just thought was cool. Probably not applicable to a lot of people, but did you see that on the day of the total solar eclipse, Delta is running these flights that theoretically are like following the path of totality, is what it's called. I think that's very cool in concept, but it's like, are you only going to sell the window seats? You know, what are you going to do here? I'm not sure how that will work, but I think that's a cool idea. I just like stuff like this because it's like clever. It's a once in a lifetime thing. And I'm sure some people will sign up for this, right? And it'll be fun. And, you know, I know my dad has been talking about, speaking of my dad and his bucket list items, dark episode today, but he has been talking about how he wants to go up to Maine because that's, you know, down here, I think we're going to get like 70%, 70, 80% or something like that. But he's thinking about like going up to Maine, or maybe there was another place that he was thinking of going to possibly see the eclipse, because I think it's 20, 30 years till the next one. So he's like, this one for sure. This is it, right? And the problem with that is, you know, if there are clouds, you win and you're screwed. But if you take this flight, you know, maybe I should send this flight to my dad, because if you take this flight, you know, you're above the clouds theoretically the whole entire time.
That's a great point. When I saw this, the one thing I thought, I had the same thought as you. I'm like, okay, you have to get a window seat. But then I also thought, if you got the window seat, all the other people who are not in the window seat are going to be basically hovering over you to try to look out the window. And yeah, I thought that would be an issue. But I mean, who could argue with that? They have those Northern Lights flights too, which obviously you can see the Northern Lights, I think, certain times a year from regular flights. But I know that they have some that go specifically to look at the Northern Lights. I think that would be neat as well. Seeing anything from a plane, I think that kind of plays into Av Geeks. And I know quite a few people who were sharing about that flight this week who are considering booking it or who have booked it that I saw on X and stuff. So yeah, I would do it. I think it's cool. I mean, I'm not going out of my way to do it though. So what does that say? Do I have to wait till 30 years from now when it's on my bucket list and I'm looking at, you know, that? I don't know. Maybe that's how it works, but
I'm sure I've added astronomers to the list of people I've offended, including Montana and Wyoming, because I don't know exactly how long the date is. You know what you do, Sean? You take you, Jasmine, Ellie, you book all three seats, and then you guys can keep switching. People aren't going to be climbing. You know, if it's someone I don't know in the same row as me, then they're probably going to be climbing over me to look, right? But if you, you know, if you're with people you know, or, you know, I'll tell my dad to book him, my mom, and then just buy an empty seat for himself, you know, just take away the $400 or $500 or whatever from my kid's college tuition if he's going to give it to them or something like that, and, you know, call it a day, and then you don't have anyone climbing over you. I just had this thought. It'd be so fascinating, right? What's the revenue management like on that flight? Because normally, you know, it's like choosing seats with the premiums and all that stuff. But like, I wonder how choosing seats would go on a flight like that, because there are also those seats that like are on the side, but don't necessarily have a window. Like, imagine if you got one of those.
Yeah, they probably, somebody's going to get that, right? They're not going to be on Seat Guru looking at which seat doesn't have the right window. And yeah, it's going to be ugly. $10,000 premium for seat selection if you want a window. I don't know. But yeah, I think it's smart business too.
And the more I think about it, like everyone who's going to be on that flight, it's like any affinity stuff, right? Everyone who's going to be on that flight is going to be there for the same reason. Most like there's going to be like that one random guy who just really needs to get to Austin, or I can't remember which direction it's going, right? There's going to be that one person. But other than that, everyone's going to be on there. So I bet you it's going to be a pretty like positive vibe and be like, oh yeah, yeah, come sit here, check this out for a little while, blah, blah, blah. You know, I think those opportunities, we've talked about it before. It's always great when you're like with people who are like your tribe, right? Like when you and me are talking about Disney or theme parks or what, people who are into astronomy, Umbra, I think Umbraologists, or I can't remember the term, but like, you know, people who are really into eclipses and stuff like that, you know, so when you're with a tribe, I bet you it would be a pretty chill and fun flight.
Agreed. It's so cool to be with your tribe, especially if it's something that you are really into and something that is very meaningful to you. I think our culture, I think a lot of people just make the decision to put that stuff off. And when it's something that's like deeply meaningful or deeply exciting, and it's going to be a really great memory, and as you say, maybe sharing it with a plane full of strangers who love the same thing and are going to have that same deep, meaningful experience, it's great. And that's what life's about. You know, that's absolutely what life's about. So, you know, that's why I'm flying to Paris next week to go watch the Main Street Electrical Parade in the sky, because that is one of those things for me that will touch me on that level and it'll be meaningful to me. And we all should find those things and you know, pursue and use this hobby, I guess, to try to check those things off the list when we can. And I'm excited. I don't know if I'll be able to see it from Las Vegas. Do you know, is it viewable from everywhere? Like, I know not ideally, but
I found the term. It's Umbraphile. And I don't know, but if you start closing this out, I will once again not pay attention to you for 30 seconds and find the info for you.
Well, usually I just close this out by asking where people can find you when they're not listening to this fine podcast, but I don't know if I've stretched out long enough.
You did a great job. So you can find me at As Joe Flies, all over social media, Joseph Chung at travelmation.net. If you would like to book a trip with me, 13 states, Sean, for totality: Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, Illinois, Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. And it is not flying over. It's not going to be over Nevada at all. I'm sorry. So no, although no, that's a totality.
We're not one of those experts. What was the word again, Joe? We're not those people.
Umbraphile. Las Vegas, 51.2% partial eclipse. So you're going to have.
I get a little bit of something though to look forward to.
Not passing.
For this show, you can find it at mtmpodcast.com. Everything we do on social media at Miles to Memories, and then milestomemories.com for our post podcast videos. Have our Vegas YouTube show. Everything's still going on. Thanks to everybody who listens. If you like the show, maybe throw us a 5-star review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. That helps us out a lot.
One more thing. I just want to thank, you know, we've been getting more emails recently, and we've been really enjoying those. So thank you for sending them and keep them coming.
Yeah, we love hearing from you guys and keep sending that away. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you next time.
See ya.